the legislature. Obviously, they want to move some legislation, but another big priority for them is to do no harm to Rick Scott's reelection chances, correct?
Right. I think that's the basic theme is do no harm, because you know, at the end of the day, a lot of Floridians don't pay attention really to what goes on in Tallahassee. Tallahassee is in the panhandle. It's a world away from southern Florida, where you got some of the population centers. So I think the biggest political benefit in terms of an agenda is exactly what you said, is try not to draw too much attention to yourself. And, when they talk about cutting taxes and increasing education spending, you know it's an election year.
Sure.
I mean, I can't do that in my household budget, but we're going to do it now.
That's right. It's certainly certain to play well, and it's 549-2937 to join the show. Tia Mitchell, lawmakers seem to be hedging their bets. Rick Scott's polling is not great. However, his campaign war chest is big and getting bigger. And so with those factors in play, what are the biggest priorities for lawmakers as this 60-day session rolls ahead?
Well, it's like you say, the tax cuts are a big priority. I think the lawmakers agree with Governor Scott that they want to cut taxes and fees, I should say. But they don't all agree on what taxes and what fees and how much. So it'll be interesting as the session unfolds kind of where the legislature goes. More than likely, some of the vehicle fees are going to be reversed, the tax sales holidays. But, you know, the devil's in the details. I think there's also priority with Senate President Gates and Speaker Weatherford where it comes to expanding opportunities for our veterans. That's a big kind of theme for them. School vouchers and education programs are a big theme for them as well. Not just the funding, but just, you know, vouchers for charter schools, the standardized testing, some of those policy decisions that are going to be made this year.
And if you're just joining us, the number to call into First Coast Connect right now and let us know what's on your mind as lawmakers meet in Tallahassee, that number is 549-2937. But Matt Corrigan, after first cutting education spending in Florida, the governor has restored it, and he's asking for even more this time around from lawmakers. But with a tax cut at the same time, as you said, those numbers don't add up. If the governor's reelected, won't there be a piper to pay at some point?
Well, the idea is that the economy is going to grow enough where you get enough revenue to come in. Education advocates are going to say, yeah, it's great that we're going to increase spending, but it doesn't make up for the years that we've cut back. And when you look at education spending, I think it really shows the evolution of Governor Scott. He came in really as a Tea Party advocate, going to cut almost all government, and really learned a hard political lesson that if you go after education, you're going to pay a price. And so that's come out first and front and center, that he wants to increase education spending.
And Tia Mitchell, let me ask you about that as well. As the governor sort of pivots more towards the center, is there any pressure on lawmakers to do the same? The polling shows that the Republican-controlled legislature is at odds with the majority of Florida voters on a number of issues, especially including immigration and medical marijuana. What about those issues? Are they likely to get any play?
Well, it's interesting you ask that. For medical marijuana, it is moving. It is moving. And there, especially the strain, the Charlotte's Web strain that parents have said will help children and doesn't have the THC where you can, you know, get high and things like that. That seems like it's being embraced, even though the legislature is very conservative. I guess they're letting their more libertarian leanings drive that conversation. Immigration, not so much, but tuition for children of undocumented immigrants, in-state tuition, that is moving and does seem like that also could get done this session. And then there also kind of is indications early that possibly the legislature is avoiding some of the more controversial topics. For example, yesterday an abortion bill was postponed at the last minute. Planned Parenthood had showed up to oppose the bill. It was going to be controversial because it would have restricted abortions in Florida if a fetus was deemed viable. which is even more stricter than the state's current ban on abortions in the third trimester. But that bill was postponed at the last minute, and so it led to rumors like, is the legislature avoiding kind of a firebrand legislation because of Governor Scott? Now, the sponsor of the bill, who is Senator Flores, says that that wasn't the case, and she's going to still pursue this abortion bill, but we'll see if it actually comes back up in committee.
And if you're just joining us, we want your calls right now at 549-2937. What would you like to see accomplished as lawmakers meet in Tallahassee? Matt Corrigan, it's a fairly modest list of priorities for the governor. As you said, raising public school spending, money for Everglades restoration, money for tourism, a sales tax holiday for school supplies, hurricane supplies, hiring child protection investigators who review child abuse allegations, an across-the-board tax cut. These are broadly popular proposals. Now, let's discuss. Give me your thoughts. So as you look ahead to the governor's race, should Charlie Crist be successful in winning the Democratic nomination for governor, how can Governor Scott use whatever's accomplished in this session in that race?
Well, Governor Scott is very consistent in his message. He's not the best spokesperson, but he's very consistent. And his message is going to be very simple. The economy is much better under my administration than when Charlie Crist was governor. That's really his campaign. And the tax cuts and the increase in education spending are kind of cherries to that process. But yeah, I think Tia made a really good point that I think there's an agenda that's, maybe easy to pass, that's popular. And then there are other issues that may come up that may make the session a little bit more interesting. Stand your ground. I think they're going to have to do something to address these controversial self-defense cases. And, of course, we've had a couple here in Jacksonville. I don't think they necessarily want to do that because Florida has traditionally been one of the most pro-gun states in the nation in terms of legislation coming out. But I think they're going to have to address that somehow.
Tia Mitchell, what about the protests and activists that have gone to Tallahassee to lobby state lawmakers about the Florida Stand Your Ground law? What are you hearing about that?
There have been a series of protests about Stand Your Ground, as well as Medicaid expansion and voting rights. I think that the people are being heard. For example, Senator Latvala, when the Dream Defenders were in the Capitol on Tuesday, he went out, he asked them what they were there for and what their issues were, and kind of had nice things to say about that they made valid points. I think that being said, actually getting something done when the Florida House is so conservative is a very hard task. It's one of the reasons why Governor Scott supported Medicaid expansion, but hasn't talked about it really at all since in months. So when it comes to Stand Your Ground, there's a warning shots bill that, because it has a more conservative gun rights angle to it, that one to me is more likely to get done than tweaking the Stand Your Ground law itself. But we're early in the session. Medicaid expansion, unless there's someone in the House leadership who changes their mind and starts speaking a different tune, that seems dead in the water.
And the warning shot bill, Matt Corrigan, as you mentioned, that was inspired by one of these high-profile local cases that's still ongoing. The local woman, Marissa Alexander, who initially faced a 20-year prison term for firing what she said was a warning shot.
Right. And I think Tia makes a good point about the House. It is so conservative, and our history of gun legislation in the state is, again, probably one of the most pro-gun groups of laws in the nation. And so it is going to be difficult. So the test will there be enough pressure on the legislature to get something done? I think the warning shot bill has a chance. I don't know all the details of the bill, but I think by its title, the basic idea is that you can fire a warning shot and not get under the 10-20 life penalty.
Yeah.
That's, I think, tough to interpret. And at the end of the day, it'll be interesting to see if the lawmakers wade into the more controversial aspects of this, the idea, what is a reasonable fear in terms of your own self-defense? And that's a difficult definition to get at.
And let us know your thoughts about politics this morning as we discuss the governor's race in Florida and the state legislative session at 549-2937. Tia Mitchell, Governor Scott, and I'm quoting here from your publication, the Tampa Bay Times, faces the greatest uphill climb of any incumbent governor since Republican Bob Martinez ran for a second term way back in 1990 and lost to Democrat Lawton Chiles. His campaign cash is healthy. His polling numbers are not. How is that affecting the chatter at the Capitol? You're there every day. How much is that dominating? How much is that on the minds of lawmakers?
Quite honestly, I think it's, first of all, many of the lawmakers are running for election themselves. So at this point, I think their goal is having a good session, passing the budget, making some of these tough decisions. They're not really focusing on the campaign too much right now because, number one, everybody kind of thinks it's going to be a slugfest between Charlie Crist and Governor Scott, and it's really going to heat up over the summer. Here's what they are talking about at the Capitol when it comes to an election. Is Senator Thrasher's seat going to be open? And because there are rumors that he could be stepping down to become president of Florida State. Now, Florida State is just now getting underway with their presidency search. They haven't even hired a search firm. That will happen on Friday. But the rumor du jour is that Thrasher wants the job, and if he wants it, he'll get it. And that is what everybody's been talking about.
I think we just broke a little news here. Well, it's not official, but that's
an interesting
tidbit. Matt Corgan, of course, John Thrasher, an influential lawmaker from our neck of the woods.
Right. But he's had a long history with FSU, so it wouldn't surprise me if he applied for the position. You know, in higher education, you've seen a trend toward having elected officials become presidents. Of course, UNF, we
John
have
Delaney.
John Delaney. But you also saw recently in one of the searches across the state where a former senator, U.S. Senator George Lemieux, did not get the position. And so it really depends upon who's on that search committee, but it's definitely a possibility.
And what's on your mind as we talk politics this morning on First Coast Connect with UNF's Matt Corrigan and Tia Mitchell, Capitol reporter for the Miami Herald and the Tampa Bay Times. Whether it's the state legislative session or the governor's race, give us a call with your thoughts at 549-2937. Teresa in San Marco is on the line. Hi, Teresa. Good morning.
Hi. I just had questions about fracking. I had gone to Tallahassee, and I've seen a couple of documentaries, Gasland 1, Gasland 2, and Groundswell Rising, which I would recommend to Floridians to see, on fracking itself. And there was some concern that Florida's base is limestone, which I'm not really familiar with, and the delicacy of the base. It's rich in water and calcium, even more so than you would think shale-produced gas, but I would like Floridians to at least know what it is they're talking about before they yay or nay some process that they don't know anything about. Mm. So I would just recommend seeing Gasland, Gasland 2, and Groundswell Rising regarding fracking and understand what it is we're, you know, what kind of Pandora's box we may be opening.
Teresa, thanks for that. Yes, those documentaries have made an impact. Tia Mitchell, is that on the agenda at all this session?
It's come up. It's not a huge, you know, it's not one of the top priorities, but I will say it's come up. It's one of those things that it's kind of complicated and you got to really be into it to know it. I personally do not know a lot about the topic, but I have heard it mentioned. I think it's part of kind of some bigger packages lawmakers are working on.
And Sandy in Mandarin's on the line. Hi, Sandy. What are your thoughts this morning?
Hi. But there's two nurse practitioner bills that we've been trying to get through now for quite a few years. Florida is the only state out of the 50 states that does not have full prescriptive privileges for advanced registered nurse practitioners, which I have been one for 17 years. And also the other bill is not requiring supervised physicians and allowing nurse practitioners to have solo practices. There's about 30, 35 states that allow this. Again, Florida is behind the times. As we look to the Affordable Care Act and more people on that, and although we did not accept money to expand our Medicaid program, nurse practitioners would also be able to help with that. It's just really frustrating to have all of this knowledge and not be able to use it because the AMA is so afraid that we're going to take over. And what they don't realize is we don't want to take over. We just want to practice to our full ability here in the state.
And that's
I'll take my comments off here.
And that's Sandy down in Mandarin. Sandy, thanks for your call. Tia Mitchell.
Yes, I have been following this issue closely. It is one where the doctors, the Florida Medical Association, is a very powerful lobby in Tallahassee, and they have opposed giving nurse practitioners more independence and more authority. However, the House leadership has decided that scope of practice is going to be kind of their health care push this year. And so the House leadership has been very supportive of legislation that allows nurse practitioners to practice independently without a supervising doctor to prescribe controlled drugs. So the Senate has a proposal that does not go as far as the House. So I don't think it's so much as there won't be anything done as to where the compromise is. The Senate proposal only deals with nurse practitioners, whereas the House proposal deals with, like, you know, nurse anesthesiologists, I believe, and some other kind of, you know. So there will be something done, I believe, this year. We're just not sure what the details will be.
And then finally, Matt Corrigan, there will be accomplishments this session. Not everyone might like them, but they do have an agenda.
They do, and what's interesting to watch, the Florida legislature's leadership is so important. Who the Senate president is, Senator Gates, and Speaker Weatherford, they really control the agenda. And they've done a really smart thing by working together. And so at the end of the day, and I think what your caller was referring to, getting the legislation through, you really got to sell the leadership. If the leadership's not on board, it's not going to go anywhere.